Welcome back, everybody, to This Week in Japan, the show that brings you the most trending news stories and cultural insights from Japan. Today is November 19th, and we're coming to you straight from Hiro, Tokyo. I'm your host, Julian Domanski, and joining me, as always, is my co-host and founder of Japan Insider, Yasuharu Matsuno.
Hey, guys, welcome back. So I start with kind of a random question today.
Okay.
It's an honorable British gentleman.
I am.
You like Harry Potter.
Why not? Of course.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
He's a cultural icon.
Right. And because it's played in many different countries, they have many dubbed versions as well.
Right. It's extremely popular in Japan, right?
Right. And this clip on TikTok. So it's comparing the way Harry Potter says, what do you say? Expecto Patronum? But can you explain?
When he casts his spell, right? That's he's like main spell. And the Patronus is like a spirit that comes out of you or something like that. I'm sorry to all the Harry Potter fans if I'm getting that wrong, but it's basically the gist of it.
Yeah, so it's to defeat an enemy, right?
Yeah, yeah. But he comes out as like a stag, right? Or like a deer, like with the antlers and stuff.
Right, yeah. I mean, you should see this first.
Expecto Patronum! Expecto Patronum! Expecto Patronum!
So yeah, I guess this is just some random Japanese guy trying to compare the English version, German version, a Japanese version, and I guess the final one is from the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, it was in Spanish, but I couldn't remember what the flag that was, but that's funny. Yeah,
I mean, most people are laughing at how the DR version sounds so different, but I actually thought the Japanese version was quite goofy too.
Expecto
Patronum. Yeah, for the Japanese version, instead of like killing or, you know, defeating an enemy, it sounds like, I hope you die. Yeah. It sounds so weak, doesn't it?
It's got a very like heavy like anime tone to it.
It does.
It sounds it's a bit soft, yeah. Especially, yeah, that scene is like really dark in the movie, right? And that he's like trying to kill Voldemort.
I think so. He doesn't usually do this.
I think that's right from the end, isn't it? But that's pretty funny.
Patrona.
Yeah.
Anyway, so besides, I actually found many interesting stories this week. So the first one is, you remember last year we talked about Sota Fuji, the young shogi
player.
Master.
Yeah.
So he won his first major title last July at the age of 17. Mm. And recently he won his fourth major title, Ryuo, which means the Dragon King.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah. I think just a few days ago. And the title Ryuo is most prestigious of all the titles in the world of shogi. But he's still 19 years old.
Oh, wow. That's crazy. Yeah. I remember the story last time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been seeing his face a lot of places.
Yes.
There's like, I've even seen like games and stuff. He's got his own like game on the Switch.
That's true.
Like a shogi game, right?
Which is understandable. And yes, so back then when we talked about him for the first time, he was still 17, right?
True. Yeah.
And, you know, unsurprisingly, he's still 19. And he's now the youngest person in the history of Japanese chess to hold four major titles at the same time.
Oh, wow.
And now he's officially the top of the shogi world.
He is the Dragon King.
That's
such a cool title.
Dragon King and the Master and, you know, everything.
That's crazy, man.
Mm-hmm. To give you a reference point, the previous holder of the title Dragon King was 51 years old.
How do you think that guy felt? Because I feel like if you're 51 years old and you get bitten by a 19-year-old, you might feel like some way like kind of embarrassed because he's so young. But then But then maybe in the other way, you feel like, wow, like the next generation, they're so powerful. So it might make you feel good about the game of shogi in general. I wonder like which side he kind of went with.
Yeah. That's an interesting question because it's not from, you know, 51 years old guy. It's not just next generation, but it's almost next generation, right? If not next.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was also wondering, in the first place, how can a young teenager like him beat a lot more experienced players than than him.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the same thing can be said for the Western chess, but more strategies that you know, more combination, more tactics, the more advantageous you are in principle.
Absolutely, right? So, yeah, I mean, Chogi is basically just another permutation of chess, right? It's just they're very similar games, but with slightly different rules. But if you think about all the pieces on the board, there's like a, I mean, there is a number of combinations, but it's in the, like, the billions, right? Mm-hmm. So obviously the more moves that you can imagine in your head and plan ahead for, then you can kind of get out of any situation or whatever. But that takes time to accumulate, right? So for him to be able to do that at the age of 19, it's just, it's almost unbelievable.
So there's one interesting theory as to why Sota is so good. And I read an article somewhere that he's been playing shogi quite often with the AI.
Since
he was a small kid.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, AI is much stronger than humans at shogi today. And so he sometimes take a unique approach that no human players can think of.
Right. Yeah.
So
yeah.
He almost learned from the AI.
Oh, I see. Yeah. It's an interesting way. Yeah.
Who's smarter and stronger than any humans. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because I don't know about shogi, but I remember, I forgot the name of it. I think it was called Big Blue. It was like Google's like AI machine. And it was about 10 years ago, but they basically taught it to play chess. But they didn't teach it how to do maneuvers. They just taught it all the rules.
Right.
And it just played against itself for like weeks on end. And then it played like some like Russian grandmaster and just like destroyed him.
Yeah.
So I guess they could apply the same techniques to shogi, right?
Yeah. I think that's the power of machine learning. Because they never get tired.
That's it. They never get,
they never forget.
That's it. And they have access to, no matter what combination of pieces on the board, they have a reference and be like, oh, it's like this time that happened. And then they'll just use that tactic.
Right. So in my opinion, it's not that human beings are necessarily getting smarter, but the AI is.
Yeah.
But yeah, kind of contradicts to what I just said. But because the AI is becoming smarter by kind of training with them, playing
games with them,
also make at least some people smarter. Maybe.
Of course, I don't know if you've heard the phrase "work smarter, not harder." That's kind of becoming quite popular nowadays, and I think it's really
finally in Japan too. I would say.
Oh, really? Yeah. That's good. That's good.
I mean, gradually.
Because it works, right? You know, now that we have all this technology, it's all about utilizing, the benefits and the efficiency of technology to kind of cut out all the heavy lifting. And if that is the case with a game like shogi, where you have to learn maybe like a bunch of moves that aren't really necessary, or you can learn some really advanced tactics from a machine that's already kind of put in the hard work. I mean, I think I kind of agree with you, because other than him being like a superhuman, how would you explain someone of that age being able to best someone who's been playing the game for 40 years and would have been exposed to way more variants and combinations of moves, right?
I know. I mean, he's 19 years old. So technically he's still a child in Japan.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
But on a side note, I wonder how he's going to spend the rest of his life reaching the very top level as a teenager.
I do. Yeah. I mean, I was wondering that as you were talking about the main story, is like this guy could potentially have so much potential in other fields, right? Imagine if you went into like physics or something. He probably has some kind of like Stephen Hawking kind of brain.
True.
And I don't know. I wonder if he has any aspirations to maybe not give up shogi, but now he's like won all the titles.
Yeah.
He might get bored and think,
I'm curious too. Yeah. I felt the same. How is he going to keep his motivation for shogi?
That's it, yeah. Other than just defending the title.
Yeah, he has no rivals now.
Yeah, maybe he'll invent a new game, like double shogi or something.
Maybe not impossible.
Extreme shogi, yeah.
I guess we'll see. But in any case, congratulations to the new king of shogi.
That's it, the dragon. So on the topic of unstoppable machines, this week on Wednesday, rail operator JR East invited the media to observe a test run of an autonomously operated bullet train in Niigata. So this is kind of following the same vein as automated cars, but obviously it requires probably less like sensor technology and like smart algorithmic stuff because it's just on a track, right?
I see.
But basically what they were trying to prove is that the train could drive itself. It drove about 5 miles and it only went about 110 kilometers. So it wasn't like the full speed, but it left Niigata station and drove all the way to the train depot. Also in Niigata. And basically, yeah, they're just trying to test out whether or not they can pilot or conduct a Shinkansen train, you know, without an operator. And this might be the beginning of the end for all train drivers in Japan.
Possibly.
So there was obviously staff on board. There was a conductor, a guy obviously sitting there just in case for emergencies. And it was a E7 series train. I don't know, like, for any train nerds out there, you are Toritetsu, if you know which model that is. But it's kind of an interesting move forward because I feel like maybe train driver is one of like the most, well, one of the most like revered jobs in Japan. You know, like in other countries, they're like, I'm a lawyer or I'm a surgeon. I don't say it's on that level, but like, it's quite respectable, right?
I would say so.
You say like, oh, I'm a Shinkansen driver. Everyone will be like, oh, that's a cool job, right?
Right.
So I just remember we talked about the train conductor that arrived late to the train and got his salary reduced for
58 yen, I believe it was.
So just for 2 minutes, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess once this kind of automation system is in place, I don't think we will need to worry about people getting late or, you know, arguing with the company. Or,
yeah, that's a good way to think about it. I mean, I guess they'll still need to have staff. They do mention that, you know, it was actually operated remotely. So they didn't mention where the remote center was. But they were also using this as an opportunity to test out the new, like, 5G network in Japan. Because 5G is being heralded as not just, like, more data per second, but it's the speed at which it can change data. So it's very good for live transmissions because there's very, very little latency, which you might need, obviously, for something traveling as fast as a Shinkansen. You want it to be able to respond, like, immediately.
Right.
I'm sure, as you can imagine, when you pull a train into the station, right, you have a very little margin of error as to, like, where it stops, right? So all the doors line up. And apparently that margin is 50 centimeters, or half a meter, right? And this test, when it stopped, it was only 8 centimeters off its mark, which is basically the same as a human. Because, you know, a human is only doing it by eye, right? So and I'm sure they have some dials and stuff in the cabin, but, you know, to stop a train that's traveling 300 kilometers an hour, obviously slowly, but to stop it within 8 centimeters of accuracy is pretty crazy.
Yeah, I think that's impressive, but I wouldn't say I'm surprised because as we just talked about the AI, they're machines, you know, they keep learning.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, so maybe it's 8 centimeters now, but it could easily be less than 5 centimeters in a few years' time, maybe.
Yeah, 8 millimeters probably.
Yeah, yeah, in the future.
Yeah, right? I don't see why not. But one of the kind of thing I was thinking as I was reading this story was, I wonder how it felt to be the conductor who was sat there in the test, right? Because he was there just in case anything went wrong. But he must have been sitting there, like, not touching anything, just thinking, this is the end of my career. like if the ultimate goal is to replace all the drivers, he's like, why am I sitting here? Like, I should just leave now.
Yeah, shouldn't help the enemy.
Yeah, that's it. So I kind of feel bad for him. And then just a very quick add-on to this, as we're talking about Shinkansen drivers. I don't know if you saw the story this week about a Shinkansen driver who got busted for playing a mobile game while he was driving.
But yeah, I mean, after talking about all these, we can kind of understand where he's coming from, right?
Exactly, right, yeah. Because he got a lot of flack, obviously. Apparently, it came out, he was playing some, like, GPS game. It wasn't revealed what, but I guess something like Pokemon Go. But apparently, he'd been playing it for 10 years. So he just got caught. But when he was approached by the company or his bosses, he was like, yeah, I've been doing it for 10 years. So maybe he's the reason they're going to automate all the trains.
That's too painful to hear.
So, yeah, it's just a little side note, but I thought the coincidence that both those stories came this week was maybe not a coincidence.
Interesting. So from a different standpoint, I think we would always want at least some people on the train because we also talked about the stabbing incident on the KO line, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So even if all the driving part is automated, I think we would want people to protect people. I mean, protect the passengers in case something happens.
Yeah, of course. But it kind of falls into kind of different line of work, I guess, being like a security.
Of course.
Or,
yeah.
But I mean, this is a very quick side note, but I did see a lot of videos on Twitter this week of people posting saying like that they'd never seen before, but a lot of like security getting onto trains, people like with the yellow jackets and like patrolling up and down and stuff. So at least kind of following on from that story last week or 2 weeks ago, you know, at least the government seems to be doing something, or at least the train companies are.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if it's government or private security or whatever, but yeah, we'll see if they kind of keep that up.
Yeah, interesting you brought that story up because I found another story related to AI.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, what a coincidence. You know, so many AI related stories this week. So there's this 16-year-old high school girl, Ayano Kurogi-san, recently won a business competition held in Kanagawa Prefecture, and she invented a system that can prevent aori unten. Have you heard of it?
Aori unten? Is that like driving through a green light?
No. I mean, you know unten for sure.
Yeah, for driving. Oh, aori, sorry. Not aori. I was thinking like green.
Aoru means to, I guess, provoke in Japanese.
Oh, okay. I don't know that word. Okay.
And I think it's called tailgating in English.
Oh, okay. Aori unten. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
So luckily, we've never encountered any aori unten while we're driving together. But it's been a huge societal issue for last like several to 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not sure about other countries, but in Japan, there are many people whose personalities just transform.
Oh, absolutely.
When they start driving.
Yeah, so I'd say it's not a uniquely Japanese thing. It definitely happens in the UK as well. But I feel like it sticks out more in Japan because most people drive quite politely. Whereas like, you know, in the UK, people are always like beeping their horns and, you know, swearing at each other and stuff.
Interesting.
But in Japan, it's like either zero or like 100.
Oh, I never thought about it that way. Yeah, but you may be right.
Yeah, it's just like completely calm or like complete aggression. There's no like middle ground, you know. It's kind of weird.
Right. I think I totally agree. Yeah. So, yeah, what's scary about some people in Japan is that generally, it's the most quiet, like modest, like humble person that changes all of a sudden when they get on a car.
Right, right.
And my understanding is that some of those people are quite stressed daily because they have to say yes to their bosses and, you know, be nice to all the people around them.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, very stressed. But I guess when they enter a private space in a car, I think they feel like they're riding on a Gundam, you know, a huge robot.
I don't disagree with that. Yeah, you feel like invincible when you're in a car, right? Even if you're in like a little mini Cooper or something, like a tiny, you've got this like box of metal around you.
Yes.
So like, even if someone starts swearing at you or gets aggressive, you know, they can't get you, right? Mm-hmm. So you're in like a private cage. I think it's the same thing as we've talked about before with like a lot of Japanese people have these anonymous Twitter accounts where they just like blow off steam. And obviously a lot of the time they get way out of hand,
way over
the line, right?
Yeah.
So it's probably the same effect.
Yeah, yeah. There are some or many commonalities between people that do aori unten and use anonymous accounts on Twitter. But in any case, aori unten has caused many serious accidents in the past. And as a matter of fact, many people got killed. So last year, the Japanese government finally changed a law to punish criminals that practice aori unten.
Oh, it wasn't illegal before.
It was kind of, but within a gray zone.
Right, okay. Maybe not strictly punishable, but maybe you can get like a fine or something.
Not even that, just by aori unten, unless you cause the accident. I mean, if you cause an accident, then of course you get arrested, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But if it doesn't end up getting into an accident, then it was difficult to arrest those people basically very bad driving manners. So recently, many people have installed what's so-called driving recorders. Have you heard of dorareko?
No, but I can guess what
that
means.
Another Japanese English dorareko, word, okay. Driving recorder.
Right.
On their cars to protect themselves from potential troubles or accidents.
Mm-hmm.
And this girl, who's been studying programming at school
developed a system where a camera detects the distance between your car and the car behind your car.
Mm-hmm.
And if the car behind you gets too close for three times in a short period of time,
yeah,
it automatically asks you on a car navigation screen, you know?
Yeah, like, yeah.
There's a screen in the middle, right? Whether you want to report to the police.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And I think this is quite practical because for most people, Audi unten, when you encounter them, it's quite scary.
Sure, yeah.
And when you're driving and basically panicking, it's not easy to call the police and explain where you are.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, what you're encountering.
Mm.
But if all of this can be automated, because the car has GPS, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's
just tracking you the whole time, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's easy to share the location with the police, exactly where you are.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, congratulations to, what was her name again?
Kurogi-san.
Kurogi-san. That's a great idea. It's great to see some kind of ingenuity by such young people and especially women in the tech space. You can always have more of that. That's really cool. And yeah, as a driver in Japan, I would say it's just kind of annoying. I mean, I would say maybe I do it sometimes by mistake. I'm just driving a bit too fast and I don't realize.
Right.
But I think we all know there's those people who, you know, they just don't give up. They just keep staying behind you. And like you
intentionally.
Yeah, yeah. And you're going the speed limit. So like it's like what do you want me to do? Like
so yeah, as you mentioned, we need more young innovators like them, whether it's Sota Fuji or Kurogi-san.
Yeah, yeah.
And make this country a better place to live.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think this is a complete theme going on this week. This is not another AI story, but this is an incredible technology story I've got next.
Technology week.
We're taking a little trip out of Japan for briefly to go to Bamiyan Valley in Afghanistan. Huh. So a few miles to the west of Kabul, the capital city of Afghanistan, there's a place called Bamiyan, and there's a famous place called Bamiyan Valley, which apparently used to be along the Silk Road trade route many centuries ago, where traders would go from Asia across to Europe and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And there's a very famous cave there that once housed the oldest oil painting in the world. It was painted in the 7th century, and it depicted, and I'm sorry if I get this pronunciation wrong, but a bodhisattva, which is a kind of form of Buddha. But you know, there's a lot of Buddhists in Japan, right?
Yeah.
So you probably know a little bit more about this phrase than I do.
I think it's called bosatsu in Japanese.
Okay, yeah. I think I've heard that word before.
Mm.
So it was, what is a bosatsu?
So in my understanding, bosatsu is a form of Buddha who remains in the world of humans to rescue people that are in need.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yeah.
It's a very popular, maybe one of the most common form of Buddha in Japan.
Oh, I see.
Bosatsu.
That's very interesting. Yeah. So, I mean, the first link to the story is there already to Japan, right? Because Buddhism is quite prevalent in Japan, and as it is across the rest of Asia. But apparently this is Bamiyan Valley Cave. This is the furthest that Buddhism spread to the west.
Right.
And then it kind of obviously met with like Islam and there was a lot of like, you know, divide there.
Sure.
So the next stage of the story goes back to 2001 when the Taliban, during their first occupation of Afghanistan, they destroyed the cave or the paintings.
Mm.
And there were also two giant Buddha statues.
Oh.
But obviously, you know, under Islamic law, they were idols of different gods that belonged to different religions, right? So they were destroyed. But a Japanese team of researchers and artists actually took it upon themselves to recreate this artwork that was destroyed.
How?
So there's a whole team of people, but one of the co-leaders of the reproduction team, his name is Kosaku Maeda. Apparently, he's been visiting the region for over 50 years. So he's 88 years old now.
Oh, wow.
But he's a historian, and he's a big fan of Afghan culture, apparently, and, you know, and he studies, you know, how Buddhism spreads across the world and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
But using over 100 photos that they'd taken of the artwork before it was destroyed, and bear in mind it was destroyed over 20 years ago. So these old photos were not digital, you know, because we didn't have those cameras then.
Yeah,
they would
sure.
have been film, right? So basically using that and some kind of, again, like AI technology, like upscaling and algorithms to like piece it all together, and then having artists come in and like touch it up manually afterwards, they were able to basically reproduce the image of the wall.
Oh, wow.
But then they didn't just stop there. So it's not just like a JPEG you can download.
Uh-huh.
They actually use like a giant like a milling machine. I don't know if you know what that is. It's like a robotic arm that kind of like cuts into wood. So they programmed all the movements into this machine, and they used a giant block of styrofoam, which is like over 6 feet tall, and I think it said about 15 feet wide. And they used it to carve the wall, the shape of the wall, with all like the rock kind of indents and stuff. So precisely, it looked exactly like you're in the cave. And then they used the exact same kind of like chemical compound of paint that was originally used in the cave to completely paint it. And it just looks like you just cut that part of the cave out and like flew it to Japan. And now it just exists in like a museum.
Wow. But in reality, it was all built in Japan, right?
Yeah, it was just a team from Tokyo. I couldn't actually find like where they were working, where they were based, or who was funding the project. But it's all Japanese researchers, historians, and artists working on the project.
So I guess there are potentially many people that want to, even pay to take a look at this Bosatsu. Because first of all, Bosatsu is very popular in Japan. And also, especially after hearing all these behind-the-scenes stories.
Right.
And the fact that the original mural was in the Middle East, in the opposite side of the world from Asia.
Yeah, yeah.
I think many people would be intrigued.
Absolutely, yeah. Myself included. So yeah, it'd be really cool to go and check it out if it ever goes on a public display.
Okay, my final story of the week is the least important, I would say. But I thought it's quite funny. So just a few days ago, all of a sudden, tens of thousands of people in Japan were tweeting just one word, Kentucky.
Kentucky. The KFC, right?
Yes. And what's funny is that it's not something that KFC in Japan encouraged to do.
Right.
And actually, the company also seemed quite surprised about what happened.
Okay.
So, on Twitter, there are various random ads displayed on your screen. Sure. And sometimes you feel, you feel that that's okay. It's inevitable. But some of them are totally irrelevant and they can annoy you, right? And there was one guy who shared the life hack that if you simply tweet the word Kentucky, all the ads will be converted into the ones from KFC. And you can just enjoy looking at the images of fried chicken. Only fried chicken, And how it works, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, these days, whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or Twitter, I mean, another AI story in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
They analyze all the data that you enter, accounts that you follow and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they send target ads to you.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not that I want to keep seeing ads from KFC, but I know why people love this idea, because you often feel like all the actions that you take online have been analyzed.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems that there's no way to say no to their invasion of privacy. So misleading the AI and making it send information about something you've opted in, makes you feel better.
That's really funny. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if this ever happened to you though, but like sometimes I feel like I only spoke about something to somebody. I might say to my wife, like, oh, we need to buy like a new vacuum cleaner.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then you go on Facebook and it's like vacuum cleaner.
Yes. Yes. It's like, how do you know?
Is it listening to me? Like, there's a big conspiracy about this.
Yeah. Yes. Some people say yes, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I sometimes believe that.
It's too suspicious.
And it was funny. So it was after already tens of thousands of people tweeted Kentucky. And the next day, the company wakes up, right?
Yeah.
KFC Japan. They were wondering what's happening. And at the end of the day, they also tweeted one word, Kentucky. And that also got like 100,000 likes or something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't say it's just Kentucky Japan, but I think KFC in general have got a really good social media team.
They do.
They always have these ridiculous, like funny, like viral kind of things.
Yeah.
I think it's really important nowadays is to... doesn't matter what your company's about. If you can hire yourself a good social media team, then you can generally like gain a lot of favor from people online?
Because I checked their official account and KFC Japan's got close to 2 million followers. Mm-hmm. 2 million.
For a brand.
Corporate brand.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess the timing for KFC couldn't be any better.
Mm.
Because as you know, many people buy chicken from KFC.
Right.
On the day of Christmas.
Oh, true, yeah. Gearing up to Chicken Day, yeah. Uh-huh. It's not called Christmas in Japan, it's just called KFC Day.
Yes. Technically, it's 24th of December, yeah. So Christmas is...
Kentucky no hi. Uh-huh,
uh-huh. So yeah. I think they couldn't be happier to promote themselves before the best-selling season.
That's absolutely ridiculous, but I love it. What a great story. Okay. All right, well, that wraps us up for all the news stories this week. So let's dive into the final segment of the show, Word of the Week.
Okay, so today I'm going to introduce to you an interesting Japanese word. The word of the week is nitoryu.
Nitoryu? Mm. Oh man, that's a weird one.
But at the same time, this is not a new word.
Okay.
I would say it's got a long history, hundreds of years.
Okay.
I'd say it was started to use in the Edo era.
That makes it even harder.
Age of samurais.
Yeah.
And that's the hint.
Oh, okay. Okay. Because when something's not really old, it's obviously much more cultural.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you're a native, it's much harder to...
I give you another hint.
Guess the...
So... Maybe for this one, you can take a look at kanji.
Yeah, okay, that might be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
So can you explain?
The first one is ni, like two.
Mm-hmm.
To is like sword.
Mm-hmm.
And ryu is like to flow, right?
Flow or has another meaning.
Oh, okay.
Which means style.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay. Oh, so this is referring to when samurais used to have like a katana. And like a tanto, like short sword.
Mm.
And they would like fight like two sword style. Is that what it refers to? Like,
that's almost the right answer.
Right.
But in the past, samurais almost never used two swords because they're heavy, right?
Right.
And it's just inefficient and even dangerous to yourself. You know,
right.
You may cut your own arm.
Yeah, stuff. Yeah.
So they almost always use one sword at one time.
Mm.
But you've heard of the legendary samurai, Miyamoto Musashi.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's the first guy who started using the long sword and the short sword at the same time. So it's referring to his style of fighting.
Uh-huh.
And he's the inventor of Nitoryu style.
Ah, okay.
I mean, that's almost like double meaning because Ryu means style.
Yeah, yeah.
So double sword style or Nitoryu.
Ah, okay.
But then... This word, Nitoryu, is appearing on news articles every day these days.
Right, okay.
But used in a different context.
Sure, okay, interesting.
But maybe it's a bit hard for you to guess because you're not a sports guy,
right.
So to say.
No, not really, especially not Japanese sports.
But what's popular? What sports is most popular in Japan?
Soccer or baseball?
Baseball.
Baseball. Oh, I know what this is about.
Yeah?
This is referring to Otani Shohei and the
fact
that he's like a great fielder and pitcher.
Yes.
Or batter and...
Pitcher.
Ah, okay, yeah.
Yeah. So I think in a matter of few hours, the MVP of Major League Baseball for this year will be announced.
Mm.
Basically, it's almost certain that Shohei Otani will be receiving the title.
As
the second Japanese baseball player, Major League Baseball player in the history.
Oh, okay. So I thought he might be the first. I don't know the history of
it. The very first one was 20 years ago,
yeah.
In 2001 by Ichiro.
I was about to say, the only name I know is Ichiro Suzuki.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, yeah, he's legendary, right? I mean, as a British person, you know, I don't know a lot about baseball, admittedly. But yeah, Otani-san has been dominating the headlines in Japan for many reasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mainly for national pride, because everyone's just really proud that he's Japanese and he's kind of like setting the baseball world on fire with he's like double play, right? He's like, he's got a ridiculous batting record and he's also a great pitcher.
Uh-huh.
And I see a lot of people comparing him to Babe Ruth.
Yes.
Who, again, I don't know his stats, as it were, but even British people know who Babe Ruth is, right?
Yeah,
he, like, it's just a legendary name, right? So for me, that's kind of impressive. You know, as a baseball fan, I'm not sure if it's as impressive, but I'm sure it is, right? But do you watch baseball, Yasu?
I used to many years ago, but these days I don't really follow. I used to like Ichiro a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I was outside Japan, Ichiro was one of the iconic figures. I mean, I would say very few figures as a Japanese person. So, yeah, I was always proud of him. But now, I guess Otani Shohei is a new hero today.
Absolutely, yeah. So, yeah, we've got the Ryo, the Dragon King. And we've got the Nitoryu.
Nitoryu Master.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, guys, so that's all for this week in Japan. Whichever platform you're listening to us on, make sure that you're subscribed for a brand new episode every single week.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We have our Facebook page at facebook.com/thisweekinjapan. So find us there.
So stay healthy, stay safe, everybody. And let us know if there are any other exceptional athletes out there who you think could be considered Nitoryu. Or maybe in any other field, for that matter. That'd be interesting to hear your opinions. And we'll be back next week for the very next episode of This Week in Japan.